Hello, OT friends, and welcome to the Uncommon OT series. I'm Patricia Motis, and I'm your host, a Filipina-American, native New Yorker, current California transplant, bulldog mama, and an uncommon occupational therapist myself for the past 22 years. On this podcast, you'll hear me proudly feature the unique careers of occupational therapy practitioners working in non-traditional and role-emerging practice areas, settings where OT is uncommon. I invite you to receive a dose of OT inspiration, to learn, to think outside of the box, and to be energized and motivated to follow in these unconventional paths. Happy listening. Before we begin this episode, I want to highlight and extend a special thanks to our sponsors, TrueLearn and PicMonic. PicMonic is an excellent learning resource and study aid for occupational therapy and occupational therapy assistant students, whether you're studying for your classes or getting ready for the NBCOT exam. PicMonic is the only visual mnemonic learning tool that has been research proven to increase retention and help students ace their exams through the use of audiovisual learning and intelligence-based repetition algorithms to help with long-term retention while studying. How I wish I had a learning tool like this back when I was in OT school. Try it for yourself and sign up today using the link in the show notes or code TRANSITIONSOT to score a discount of 20% off your PicMonic membership. Happy studying. Hello, OT friends. So today I'm super excited to introduce you to our guest of honor, Cheryl Albright. Cheryl is an uncommon occupational therapist who uses yoga in her practice. Cheryl grew up with an older brother with autism and an aunt with Down syndrome. She began working with the disability community when she was 14 at Rotary Camp on Sawaya. She is a graduate of East Carolina University and has been an occupational therapist for 20 years. She began using yoga in clinical practice 13 years ago when she discovered yoga for the special child. She is her brother's legal guardian and advocate. Cheryl currently resides in Bradenton, Florida, and owns a yoga-based private practice, Soul to Soul Yoga. So without further ado, I'd like to present to you Cheryl Albright. Hi, Cheryl.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thanks for having me today.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast to talk about your specialty. It's something that you and I have in common. And I'm so excited to have our listeners have your story in terms of what inspired you to incorporate yoga into your practice and to talk about your thriving private practice today.
Yeah. So like you said, I'm the CEO and founder of Soul to Soul Yoga and All Ages Therapy Services located in Sarasota, Florida. It's hard to say that I've been an OT for almost 20 years. That's a hard pill to swallow. But yeah, we're here and started using yoga in clinical practice in 2009. I had taken training called Yoga for the Special Child. I went back to the school that I was working for at the time and just started with like one or two students in a group and then just kept going from there. We noticed immediate changes, like the group, the boys that were in the group weren't going to time out, which they don't use seclusion anymore, but they still were then. Mm-hmm. But it was 30 minutes once a week that they actually weren't having to run their behavior plans. And so, you know, then the administrators started going, well, what are you doing? And so then my supervisor came in and the education supervisor and people started to kind of go, okay. And then, you know, I had one student with Rett syndrome. I didn't know what to do. All the literature said maintain their skills and try to prevent loss. But they didn't say how. Things have changed mm-hmm. now, but at the time they didn't say how to do that. So I said, well, I'll try this. What's the worst that could happen, right? And she was actually able to regain some skills with some modification, which is like unheard of mm-hmm. in that disorder. So I thought, okay, well, this has merit. I'm going to continue doing my own practice and keep helping other people. And so then I was able to do traveling OT for a long time. I did that for mm-hmm. several years and bounced around the country and tried it in different settings and anything from pediatric outpatient to pediatric inpatient, adolescent mental health, even some chair stuff and skilled nursing facilities when you could do groups before and then you couldn't. And now I can't keep track of what Medicare Part A keeps doing. But, just tried it out in different settings and was like, okay, so I'm really starting to see something. And in the meantime, I would go about once a week or once a year for about a week for yoga training. Most people go for their 200 hours and they just go for it. And I was like, my brain doesn't work that way. I was like, I want small little bites. I can take it with me, assimilate it, come back for more when I'm ready, and then keep going. And that's how I evolved from there. I actually took a travel contract to get down to Florida, and then we decided to stay here. So that's kind of
Got
kind of
it.
got to see all things all over the place.
Yes. So, okay. Thank you for sharing all of that. You said something as you were describing kind of your evolution about seeing something, right? So you saw something in yoga or in the application of yoga in your practice that was effective for the clients. Can you, describe what that was that you saw?
I was starting to see not only how we have to make goals and things have to be measurable and all of those things. And we were hitting goals and objectives and stuff, but it was like beyond that. Like kids just seemed happier somehow. There was more of a connection. They were happy to be doing what they were doing. It didn't feel like therapy. It felt like this fun thing that we were just doing. And I just happened to be facilitating it.
Got it. Oh, I can visualize it, right? Because I understand the benefits and the magic of yoga and how it really, it's full of options for people, right? And I talk about that all the time just because you can really just pick any limb and practice that, and that's considered yoga, right? So that's why I feel that, for clients that we serve, it's also it's a modality that can be so adapted and really be so connected to the occupational therapy sort of core values and principles, right? So I'm hoping we can touch upon some of that today so that we can really help, bridge this for some of our OT friends out there who might be struggling. And my hope is after this episode, folks will gain some kind of knowledge that's going to help them incorporate a little bit of yoga into their own OT practice. They probably already do. They're just not realizing it, right?
Right, exactly.
So you talked about what motivated you to be doing this kind of work and seeing, the main effects of it, especially for those that you served. Was there any particular reason that motivated you to contribute to this podcast? Aside from me asking.
Well, there was that. I was like, sure, anybody gives me a stage, I'll speak on it, virtual or not. Yeah, it's just, I think I've been getting a lot of questions lately about like, how are you doing? What are you doing? How is this OT? How is this being billed under insurance? How are you doing all of these things? Because I think people think of one misconception of yoga, I think, is that it's a physical practice. And so there are many other components to it. It doesn't just have to be physical. And I think, us as OTs, we love our frameworks, right? We have all of these, frames of reference for our practice and stuff. So why is this that any different? And the best way I can describe it is some use horses and they call it hippotherapy, and some use water and they call it aquatic therapy. This isn't any different. So you take the trainings, you do the work, you feel it with yourself before you can pass it on to somebody else. And so I think, I just want to debunk some myths because I get a mix of that's not OT and well, how are you doing that? So that was probably the biggest motivator. So I had like a reference of our conversation saying, okay, listen, spell it all out on this podcast, listen to this, and if you have more questions, then we can have a further conversation.
Yeah, great idea. So, can you describe to us the your OT practice? Can you describe to us whom you serve, some of the needs that you're addressing? And yeah, take it away.
So yeah, an average day kind of looks like in the morning, we're typically off-site. We're either in schools. We do have a contract with adolescent mental health inpatient. So most of the time we're off-site or for those students who are hospital homebound. So they might not go to school. And then in the afternoon and the after school times, it's usually, I chose my office to record in today, but usually in the afternoons, it can be a little bit busier, either in center or off site, just depends on the day. So it's a mix of both community and your traditional outpatient might look as far as people coming to you. As far as the demographics, our ages range from 3 years old all the way up to, I think our oldest student is 84. And so anywhere in between, we do host a group, therapeutic group class twice a week, chair option. So you don't have to do the practice in the chair. You may choose to do it in a chair for whatever reason. And that usually attracts a number of individuals, maybe a traumatic brain injury, mild cognitive impairment. And I say it's really for any reason you don't want to get up and down off the floor that day. We will give you an option to still do your practice, invite you into the space, but you don't have to do the up, down, up, down. And so the way the class is constructed is still very therapeutic too, and it integrates not just the physical postures, although there is some fall prevention-y kind of stuff built into it, but also having the other components as well.
Yeah, and I think what I also heard you say there, it's which is super yoga is, whatever you're ready for that day, right? Or whatever is available to you that day. And if it means closing your eyes in meditation for 10 seconds, that's what it is, right? So,
That's right.
I heard that there. So, Cheryl, what You know, I know we talked about your brother, and he being an inspiration to do this type of work. Were there any other inspirations?
I don't know about the yoga piece. I mean, that's kind of how I fell into occupational therapy. And to be quite honest, when I went to East, like I when I was looking at universities, I was looking for those that had OTPT and speech because I didn't know which one I wanted to do. And at the time, ECU still had a bachelor's program for OT. So I just went to the path of least resistance. And at the time, I didn't know there was COTA. I probably would have went to OT as well. I probably would have known. It's like path of least resistance. Yep, we'll do that. That sounds great. I don't know. We had the sensory equipment in the home. So like we had a ball pit in our basement and a trampoline and a swing set outside and all of the things. And I was like, doesn't everybody? Like, isn't that normal? Like, not, you don't have therapy balls just laying around your house. And so now they call them yoga balls or whatever. But time you had to actually buy them out of a catalog and you had to call or there was no before the internet.
I
Or you
think
could just
back
get
then it
things
was
off.
Salmons Preston. I don't know if Salmons Preston is still
Yep.
around.
I think they're all online now.
Yeah.
But
I remember those
yeah.
giant catalogs that they used to mail. Oh my gosh, we're dating ourselves.
That's all right. That's all right. Yeah, no. And we had all this stuff in the house. And I just thought that, that was normal. So when I got to OT school and we got to like frames of reference and sensory processing, I went, light bulb. I was like, I don't know that I even need to pay attention for the next couple of weeks. Like, this is what I grew up in. I just didn't know that that was the thing, right? And so, yeah. And as far as the yoga piece, I think the biggest inspiration was myself. Like, I, my teachers are big into you have to feel it before you can pass it on to others. And when I started the training, I was on a whole, I was a very sick 20 something. I was on a bunch of medications for allergies, asthma, irritable bowel, migraines, you name it, whatever. And thought, well, this is life. Doesn't everybody have all these kind of ailments that you just, live with? And by the end of that first week, I was off of everything having to do with irritable bowel. And within 6 months, I was off of everything. And so I was like, okay, what is happening? And I was always the but why kid. Like, I always want to know why my brother is the way he is. Like, what's going on in his brain? What makes that tick? And then I was like, no. Like, how, why is this working? Like, I wanted to know why. I mean, my teacher picked on me. He's like, get out of your analytical mind. I was like, but why? Like, but why? Like, I want to know. Like, I have to know the things. And so, I just, after that first week, was started reading like the Yoga Sutras, and they gave me like a list of books. They're like, I was like, but where do I start? And they're like, start with the yoga ones and then kind of branch out. And so I did. I read the Yoga Sutras and the Living Gita and said, I only got about 3 pages of it. Like, but we're just gonna, and you go back and revisit it, and you always read something a little bit different depending on where you are. And from there, just kept, there's been some great books about yoga therapy and things out there. So I just kept going and kept learning and stayed curious. And I think there wasn't like a true inspiration. I would say it was more like, how did that happen? Like, how, like, what is happening here?
Well, that can be inspiring, right? Like seeing the change in yourself and seeing how it works for you. And I've heard that before from my other guests too, that, certain things were really certain, yeah, certain their specialties really had a personal effect on their own lives. Therefore, that's sort of what fueled their passion. So I love that. And, I know that it took some time for you to begin to incorporate yoga. It wasn't right away, right after OT school. So was there, I guess, can you describe to us a little bit how you were able to bridge that together? I know a lot of our listeners are probably wondering, what kinds of credentials does one need? I know that you're a yoga therapist, correct? And I, there's also registered yoga teacher. So would you mind just clarifying for some of our listeners kind of the difference and where your expertise may lie?
Sure. So yoga training in general is broken up into hours. As you know, I think you're 500, I forget,
I'm 200.
200.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's broken up into hours, right? And so the first chunk is usually a 200 hour, which is the equivalent of a month worth of training. Now, us as OTs and people that have master's degrees and beyond are probably like, wait, what? And so, yeah, I fight with the Yoga Alliance all the time. I don't really think they do a whole heck of a lot, and people are getting hurt. And I was like, you really have to start thinking about what the actual, because people then look at them like they're an expert in what they're doing, and they've had a month's worth of training.
I completely agree. In fact, during my training, I felt that, gosh, if I didn't have my OT background and if I didn't have that OT foundation, I'm not sure, this would have been, yeah, I don't know how well that would have really gone and what kind of knowledge I would have taken in, because it was really quite a lot of information for a short amount of time. And, coming also from a sort of trauma-informed lens, I felt that there were aspects of that that were just sort of touched upon. And if I weren't an OT, I probably would not have been so cognizant or just so, open-minded about that piece.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're absolutely correct. And, the next chunk is usually like up to 500 hours, and then it keeps going. And I haven't kept up to date with the yoga therapist as far as I think you have to have 1,000 hours worth of training. And so for me, they were doing portfolio reviews. I don't know if they still do them or not, but what happens is they go, okay, you're a medical practitioner of some point. We'll count 50 hours, which I was like, excuse me. but 50 hours worth towards the bulk. And people that have been doing this work for so long before they existed, really, they were like, okay, so let's take a look at, so I went all the way back. So when I first started with Yoga for the Special Child and was doing the groups and doing, and I was very conservative with those numbers. Like, if there's only 40 weeks of school, let's assume that, 30 of those sessions happened, and let's figure out, the numbers that way and all the work that I have been doing since. And
Yes.
so it was, well over 1,000 hours worth of that. And the fact that, they also want you to keep a certain amount of professional, they call it professional development hours. It's not continuing ed. It's the same thing. Anything that I teach, I make sure to get credentialed for both so that, if there's people out there like me that want both and can get credit and kill two birds with one stone,
Yes.
we can do that too. And so it depends, it's broken down into hours. And people ask me all the time, do I really need yoga training to be teaching yoga? Yes, you do. Sorry, but yes, yeah. You can teach funny stretches with a name if you'd like, but that's as far as it's going to go, right? And so the physical aspect, yeah, maybe, However, there's so much more that goes into the back end and the philosophy and pranayama is not just a breathing exercise, and like there's more to it than that, and it's more complex
Yes.
than that. And I've heard PT say that more, where they're like, oh, I don't need training. I can do that. All you're doing is silly looking stretches then. That's it. And like, yes, you do know which muscles you need to engage, and maybe you do have some of, that kind of knowledge, but that's as far as it goes. And all the subtle layers that are kind of involved get washed out if you don't have it. So yes, you do need something.
Yes. I completely agree. And it's great to know that it's at least 1,000 hours. So that's significantly so much more, right? Which then equips you with so much more once you're engaged in practice with someone.
Well, and there's degree programs now too. So the University of Maryland's Integrative Health Program now has a master's in yoga therapy. And there's another university, and I can't think of it off the top of my head. But yeah, they're starting to recognize that this is a thing, and that, there's so much more that we can do with it.
Yes. And it's important to the, I guess there's just more of a governing body that sort of when you, I guess you become accredited, right? There's someone who's checking to see that, these pieces are being covered within the curriculum.
Yeah, and I think the International Association of Yoga Therapists has done a really good job of having, they have research symposiums, and they're the biggest outside of India. So they're actually looking at the people that are doing the work and what it actually means. And so like people like Satbir in, out of Harvard's mindfulness program, and people are really leaning, like going leading that charge of like, no, like this is a thing, and this is, what we're doing, and that there's research behind it, because
Yes.
they're always talking about evidence-based practice. Well, they make sure once a year they have this huge symposium of research. And so they take it, I mean, they take it pretty seriously. So it's not just thing that you're, I don't know how to
Yeah.
describe it.
So can you describe to us what a typical day might be like for you in your yoga practice? Now you talked a little bit about, the folks that you served. Just what's a typical day like? What are some goals that you work on with your clients? Because it also sounds like a wide array of clients, 3 years old to 84.
So this is always a therapy services, that we do have a wide mix. So it depends on the individual that's in front of you. And so, if you've ever met one person, you've only met one person, because everybody is completely different. And so some of the goals may actually look the same. With kids, some of the, whether it's trauma, whether it's autism, or any other kind of developmental disability, there's been common themes. And so I use the quick neurological screen test, which is a standardized assessment. And they have a lot of the components of what's in my yoga class. So we're looking at the ability to call and respond. So I say something, you can repeat it, or you hear something and you can repeat it, motor-wise. There's balance. Can you stand on one foot for 10 seconds? Some of those kind of more familiar things that people may try. Holding positions, checking for strength. But there's also like eye gaze, like can you track something left to right in a smooth pursuit? And you need that for reading, writing,
Yeah.
and
Thought.
so it's interesting, because even if I were to do a traditional, like let's say we're talking peds, and I were to do the bot, some of these kids would never qualify for services. They'd be like, no, they're fine. Like they're, average. And they might look at a sensory processing measure. The thing I like is it leaves it in the neural realm. So when you're talking to insurance carriers, you're not talking sensory processing, which is something that's still quite taboo and insurance carriers don't want to talk about. You're talking about neurological function, and you're saying these parts of the brain are not functioning the way they should, and this is the functional impact of that. So it depends on the child. Some of them may have a hard time with sequencing. So we might have a hard time following those directions in a sequential manner. So how is that going to turn up? Well, they're going to have a hard time brushing their teeth or getting themselves dressed, or maybe they can't cross midline and then they can't wash their hair or whatever the case may be. The goal is still functional. The modality is what they don't have jurisdiction over. So insurance carriers don't tell me how I'm going to get somebody from point A to point B.
Mm-hmm.
This is how I choose to get people there. And so the goals still stay pretty functional. In more of the cases of like mental health, it's like, how are we going to keep you out of the hospital?
Okay.
How are we going to keep you well? And how are we, you know, what are those tools that we can use during the day? And the age span and that adolescence, so 11, 12 years old on up. And so it's a big need.
Yeah.
Is what I'm finding in this area. The state of Florida actually just opened up their Practice Act in the last legislative summit, and it was signed, and we are mental health providers. Not that we didn't know that, but our personal Practice Act didn't say that. And so the state of Florida has opened that up. So,
oh, congratulations, Florida OTs. Holy moly, I've been praying for that.
So the second it opened and signed, sealed, and delivered, it was like, that's when I started seeing a lot more of those. That's when I was invited into an inpatient facility. So we're starting to see more of, you know, we got to get the brain and the body communicating, and how are we going to do that? And I tell people I don't work in silos. So if you're going to, I want to know who the other providers are. Do you need a mental health referral? We're not doing this alone, and there needs to be other people involved.
Yeah. Kind of an interdisciplinary approach, right?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So I love that about Florida. That's so important. I want to kind of dig a little bit deeper into what you were talking about in terms of billing, right? And the vocabulary that you're using when it comes to billing, because that's how one gets reimbursed, or really your understanding of how to utilize that vocabulary, when and, you know, how, that's really what gets you reimbursed. So can you talk about that a little bit? Can you give us an example maybe of something that we can, a typical OT out there can kind of relate to?
Yeah, I would keep it as science-based as function, you know, as possible. So like when I say neuro, yes, I understand that there could be some sensory processing issues going on. That is not going to pay, the insurance carriers are not going to pay for that.
No.
So one, how is it impacting function? Two, keep it in neuro.
Keeping it to executive functions, right?
Yes. Yes. And so you're not saying anything that you're not trying to like pull the wool over somebody's head. That's not what I'm saying. So if you look at the pyramid of learning that, you know, the creators of How Does Your Engine Run came out with back in the late 90s, the central nervous system is your brain and your spinal cord. And your brain's main job is to keep you alive. And so when it's busy keeping you alive, it can't reach the higher centers of your brain in order to learn the skills that you need to be able to do the things that you need to do all, you know, throughout your day. So it doesn't matter if it's a kid or an adult. Medicare, yes, I've gotten Medicare to pay for it too. And so, you know, what does that actually look like? Like, what are you actually trying to accomplish? The goals still look the same, but instead of using, you know, something like, it's a good example. So somebody who maybe has like an auditory processing disorder, I might write, you know, we'll improve auditory processing by, you know, being able to imitate a sound reproduction for safety out in the community. So like being able to follow direction is my point, is like, how do we get it to, you know, be able to discern, you know, a parent's voice from the crowd or foreground, background, so they can actually follow a direction.
Yes, like, how and is be it safe the in the end. Because that's the ultimate goal.
Right. And so it's no different than somebody who may be on the severe mental illness side of things that has to tune out their own internal noise or the voices or hallucinations with the rest of the world in order to not be hit by a car. Like, you know, it's the same. The end goal is we want everybody to be well. We want them to be safe. We want them to be able to function to the best of their abilities. And so what does that look like? Insurance, I mean, I think because they see the word neurological deficits, they go, oh, okay, no problem.
How are you able to connect? I guess you talked about having adolescent mental health clients, right? And I'm guessing maybe utilizing some anxiety reducing type, using yoga to help reduce anxiety could be like a very kind of straightforward approach, right? How would you justify something like that from a neurological perspective?
When you end up doing the neurological screen, it will pull out things that aren't being processed. And so that's why I like it. For example, we have a student whose father has a substance abuse disorder, high level of anxiety, throw in being a teenager with social media and all the things. And if you were to just see her walking down the street, you wouldn't think anything of it, right? When you do the actual screen and start teasing out, not just being in survival mode. For somebody her age, you wouldn't expect mirroring. You would think if I held up my right hand, she could hold up her right hand. Couldn't do that. Had a hard time keeping up in PE, but not enough to be like she's stumbling over her feet. Just she could tell you that she's like, I can't really keep up with my peers doing X, Y, and Z. Balance becomes an issue because when your brain is focused on 50 million other things, like keeping you alive, you cannot stand on one foot. And then what I noticed is some of the tasks that ask you to do things with your eyes closed and the vision is occluded, some of that goes right out the window. So what does that mean kind of in reality? I mean, some can argue maybe it doesn't have a functional indication, but if we're starting to become anxious and depressed because we're not being able to keep up with our peers and we're starting to recognize that socially, and maybe reading and writing is difficult because our brain's not focused and our eyes are like ping pong balls. And then I'm supposed to get up, shower, and do all this and function. I'm just not.
The compounding effect of all of that too, right? Like feeling like you're not having the social support. How can one thrive in any environment if you're feeling different or ostracized or just not able to meet the demands, right?
Right. And so it looks different for everybody. I call everybody friends or students. The students that come to me that have more of a trauma based, that need more of the trauma based intervention, there's been some common themes, and the thing with the vision included seems to be like right there at the top. So because vision is such a part of that fight or flight, like your eyes dilate and they let in the light and you're hyper vigilant. When you take that away, they have no idea where their body is in space.
Yeah, having the, I don't know, ability to recognize that is so important in any healthcare position, right?
Well, it's funny because I was invited to do a talk about how I use soft neurological signs to guide therapy for the American Congress of Rehabilitative Medicine. And the talk was not very well received, to be quite honest. And I was like, is it, but why? Like, I understand this is rehabilitative medicine. However, somebody's trauma history, when they get their knee replacement, is not going to be in their file. So that medical procedure could trigger up something.
Yes.
Or they were in an accident and had to have, like, maybe it was a traumatic event that happened that landed them in the hospital. And to not take the mental health piece away and just be physical rehab. Like, your brain and body have to communicate together. And so I'm confused as to what they were confused about.
Yeah, me too. I guess that's the OTNS, right? And our OT lens that just, you can't take those glasses off anymore after a certain amount of time. Or I guess once to me, my once I think once you get it, you can't take those eyes off anymore because now you got it. And that's just the way that you're looking at life and the world.
Right,
Right.
exactly.
So I'm super disappointed in that group of folks who just didn't quite get it, right? Particularly because they're all healthcare professionals. And I think, I learned that lesson through my work with my clients, right? Through listening and just kind of seeing what works and what doesn't work and how important it is to really understand. And I think as a profession, that's something that's really drilled into our heads, like how client-centered. And you started out by saying that. Everybody's different. Everyone is just different. So that whole client-centeredness of our approach, I think, is so key to what makes us really effective.
Agreed.
So thanks for sharing with us some of that. So it looks like your day can have some individual sessions, and then there's some groups in there too. Do you have a team that works with you?
Yeah, so I have another OTR. She was one of my students, and she really gravitated toward it. I'm starting to get a little bit more pickier about the students that I see. I do work with some individuals that with developmental disabilities that have limited language, and I find that if students haven't had that kind of exposure, they're not going to be successful here. So it triggers their own fight or flight. The other thing I'm noticing is that I attract a lot of students with anxiety because they think they're going to be doing yoga all day. And the problem is, I can't have somebody whose energy is up here because I need you down here to bring the next person down with you. And so, but yeah, she is awesome and doing a really good job. And we got her through Yoga for the Special Child training. I do have some OTAs that work with me as well that do a mix. And so we do have both. And I have one yoga teacher that does some contracting work for me. We have groups, and she'll see a couple individuals when I don't have to have insurance paying for the service. So it leaves us a little bit more open that way. And so I'm always looking. It has to be more than an interest. It can't just be like, oh, let me try this for a while and see what happens. Like, it's a lot, and sometimes it's too much for people. And I've had, there's a couple OTAs that are like, this is not for me. And I'm like, that's all right. That's okay. Thanks for trying. And I don't what I tell all of them is, I don't expect perfection. I just expect communication. And so if something isn't feeling right, or you don't feel like this is the setting for you, or you something's not filling your cup, please let us know. And then I'm in the works of restructuring some of the admin. So I do have somebody who just does insurance verification benefits and prior authorizations, and that's the only thing she does. She does it very well.
Well, from my understanding, I think that's a big job. So it's good that she has no distractions.
She only communicates with me. I had an assistant for 3 years, and she was offered a really good deal, and I couldn't. She had to go. So the first thing that popped in my head is, if I had to do these things, this is going to come to a screeching halt. So I knew exactly who to message, and like, can you do this on the side for me at least for a little while? And she said, yeah, that's no problem. So,
Well, I
yeah.
love that you have this team behind you that's helping you with your mission, right? And I also love that you seem to apply a lot of yoga principles even in your management of your team as well, which I know
Working on
is
it.
impossible to also not do, probably, right? Just like the OT lens thing that we were talking about. And it's great that you have help with insurance and reimbursements, particularly because, now that's going to be a viable funding source for you now, especially with the whole mental health provider sort of, I don't know, what is that even called? Allowance? What is it called?
I don't know, but what I'm doing now is challenging some of the insurance companies. So we do take, Medicaid, Medicare, and government, military insurance. And so they said, well, we're not opening up a network to providers. And I was like, except for in like behavioral health. And I was like, oh, funny. Here's the bill that's like 80 pages long. It says that I am a mental health provider. So no, you need to start opening up network. I don't know if I'm going to win that battle, but I keep trying.
Yeah. I think someone's gotta oppose them, right? Someone's gotta challenge, not necessarily oppose, but challenge, particularly if it's a new law. It's something that's, newly put into place because they may not know about it yet.
That's true. And Florida Blue hasn't opened up in this area either. And they're like, well, we're only opening up to, and it seems like behavioral health. And I was like, well, listen, I'd at least like to open the door to have the conversation, even if I don't agree with your reimbursements and don't ultimately end up taking you. At least we've had the conversation. And so anything to do with government is just going to take time. So I'm.
Yes. Are there other holistic OTs out there in Sarasota that you're kind of connected with that you can, I don't know, gang up together and kind
Right.
of do some kind of class action?
It's interesting because even some of the bigger organizations can't get in network either. So I do
some work with Easter seals of Southwest Florida, and they're just as hogtied as I am. They're like, yes. we can't get these boards to open up either. And I was like, you would think they'll negotiate a rate, but they're able to get, you know, they're able to solicit for funds because they're a nonprofit. Yes. So they can bridge that gap, even if the reimbursement is low, and yet they still can't. So it doesn't matter how big you are. I mean, they've got a lobbyist on staff and they mm-hmm. still can't.
Yes.
And they still can't. So it was just like, well, I don't know. Maybe I'll send the bill to him and be like, here, here's some ammo. Like, I don't
know. Ask them for their templates. Find out what they're doing, right? But you're absolutely yeah. right. You know, these are established nonprofits. And if they're challenged by the challenge, I totally get kind of feel like a little fish, right? But then it's a changing ocean. The tides are changing. So hopefully it's just a matter of time until the payers recognize the value.
Yeah. And I think too, with that Practice Act being open, so with the stigma that's around mental health, especially in kids and adolescents, that maybe parents who don't want to seek traditional counseling may be like, well, let's try this different approach instead. Or let's try, you know, they maybe didn't think of OT because they think of like handwriting or something. So
yeah.
I'm hoping this kind of bridges that gap. Be like, no, we still need this in place. And if we can, you know, do this too, that'll be good. So
yeah, it's almost like another option, right? Because not everything works for everyone, right? Or whatever traditional ways of offering OT services may not work for everyone. And it may take OT services that employs yoga principles, that the approach that works for that person or child.
Yeah. And, you know, equipping the parents with it too. So when I do create wellness plans and things for them to follow at home, we give everybody the same language. So even, you know, my black and white thinkers like the Likert scale, they like the 0 to 10 or whatever. And, you know, one parent said to me the other day, he just walked by and said 6. And I knew exactly what to do. Like it was a plan that was in place. And so that they could then do something.
Mm-hmm.
He was starting to escalate, and at least he could get the number out, and then mom knew what to do. And so that it's empowering not only the child, but it's empowering the parent to be like, I got this.
Yeah.
Because now we're all speaking the same language.
Yes. I absolutely love that example. I think that's where the frustrations come in, right? When folks feel misunderstood or just unheard, and that simple way of being able to communicate one's needs, right? And how one can assist one with one's needs is amazing.
We're starting to do that in the groups too, like with the inpatient adolescent, the ones that are there for longer term residential. So I'll just do a quick check-in at the beginning of class, and they can put their numbers kind of down where their friends, they just give me a number and I'm like, great. And then we go from there.
Yeah.
And we just, you know, and hopefully at the end it's lower. And if it's not, it's because something came up and then they need to go.
But then you also know if it did not, right? Because there's that other, because they've communicated that it actually, no, it's about the same, which also dictates your next step. So great examples. I know we talked about reimbursement a little bit. So insurance is one viable option for funding. Are there other ways that you fund your services?
Yeah, there's a couple different ways. I mean, like any other business, we love cash. So cash pay is always good.
The gift that keeps on giving, right?
Just energy that keeps being spread around. And so, obviously we'll take cash payment. Some of the other funding sources, at least within the state of Florida, there is a homeschooling scholarship. So if students are being homeschooled for whatever reason, they can access this. And so we can bill it like OT, and it just gets processed through a grant.
Oh, I love that. How did you find out about that? Was this something that, you know, you had to kind of research
It was a scholarship fund that came out a couple years ago. There's a statewide conference called the Family Cafe, and they had a flyer, and I was like, oh, I wonder if I could be a provider. I am an OT, even though at the time I wasn't taking insurance. I wasn't taking anything else other than cash payment. And so I was like, oh, well, let me check this out. And so they're like, yeah, we'll just build under your OT license and you put the academic benefit of, you know, you have to put why it's academically relevant, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're pretty easy to deal with. They've been kind of pokey, but well, you know,
nothing you can't handle.
It's fine. Prior to the pandemic, there's an organization called the Chanda Plan Foundation. And if you had to have a neurological condition on Social Security, and I think it was like 95% of your day had to be in a wheelchair. So traumatic brain injury, cerebral palsy, MS, spinal cord injury, they would pay for up to 6 months of alternative therapy. So it could be massage, acupuncture. Since the pandemic, I don't know if they've opened that back up, but some of my adults with cerebral palsy, we were able to get funding for. Okay. This is prior to taking insurance. And so there's that. Okay. I do have private contracts with organizations. And so they pay me directly for my services. Those are more of the groups.
Mm-hmm.
When I go to an organization, and then one of the school districts I do have a contract with, and I just have to keep it academically relevant. Those are the top ones.
Yeah. So academically relevant, which probably means more, you know, attention types of goals, handwriting, gross motor types of things, right? So can you give our listeners an example of an academically relevant yoga activity?
So we do a lot with self-regulation. We come up with quicker wellness plans when they don't give me the time that I would like in order mm-hmm. to, you know, really have a robust plan, but coming up with something that works within the private schools that they're in and with the district, because if we're not regulated, they're not learning anyway.
Mm-hmm.
The eye exercises are heavily focused on. Usually these students aren't in their school district for a reason. And so a lot of it has to do with, you know, dyslexia, learning disability, whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
And so making sure those are put in there. Some of them too, they want to work on balance and things. As long as we get some of the academic pieces in there, it's just, they can't dictate how I do my job. It's kind mm-hmm. of how I look at it. And so, at a certain age, you got to start going assistive technology routes and things like that. So keeping it client-centered and focused, and if we're writing about like something that they are passionate about, or, you know, keeping it, you know, it's their session.
Yeah.
I'm just facilitating. That's yes. Like it's for them. So, I have a wide mix of, I don't like the functioning terms, but individuals who can sit and attend, but maybe have some challenges learning, all the way up to young adults who maybe don't have any verbal communication at all. So
mm-hmm.
obviously those two sessions are going to look very different.
Yes. You have such a wide array of clients and needs that you're addressing, but you know, again, with all of your examples, I'm seeing it. I'm hearing how you're using the same approaches.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the person and the need that really differs, right? So I love that. Anything else about, I guess, funding, salary, compensation that you want to share with our listeners? Do you have grants? I know you're not a nonprofit status.
I'm not a nonprofit status. We were able to get some of the COVID funds that came out. I've looked into small business grants. I haven't been awarded any. I've definitely written a ton. Alice.com has a bunch for small business for a variety. And those that, you know, identify as a minority, they have a ton of small business grants for that. They had some wellness grants that came out. I haven't heard anything about that. They've been doing a lot with disability inclusion and access. And those were more of like how to make your, you know, could you make your space more accessible? And we kind of have all those pieces already, but mm-hmm. still threw my ring into the hat for that one.
Yeah.
If there's a grant out there, I will write for it. And that's kind of how I work with my nonprofits too. I find it, you know, karma yoga, right? Act of service. Like,
mm-hmm.
And if I come across a grant, I will email all of them and be like, hey, I found this. I don't know if it's a good fit for me, but maybe it could help within your organization. And here you go. And then if they need a piece for me, then they'll ask. Lululemon awarded one of the nonprofits that we work with like a $12,000 grant, and we were able to provide services for well over a year. So it's just a matter of like, if you see something and say something and see what happens. And if you're going to work with nonprofits, it's not just you providing a service, but what else could you provide for them too? Like, mm-hmm. Yes, they're paying you, but if they have a fundraiser, show up.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, just be a part, even if you, you know, if you can sponsor it, even better. Like, just be present, and yes, it's a two-way street.
Such great advice. I often talk about how, you know, as having worked for several nonprofits, I often looked at the clients not just being the folks who actually receive the services there, but sometimes looked at staff within that agency as also a group of folks that I can serve, right? And we've addressed needs like time management, ergonomic needs, just stress management, right? Because these are typically overworked folks, right, who really need support. So I felt like our OT, our other OT expertise also assisted, you know, the system at large by helping uplift their staff. And that itself has trickled down effects. So when you talk about, you know, yoga and the giving, and you know, I think we also have the lens for that. And really, you know, we have such a variety of ways of offering what we have to offer.
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So such great advice. Any other advice for anyone who, you know, wants to follow along your path? I get so many calls and messages all the time about, you know, OT students or practicing OTs who want to incorporate yoga or some kind of wellness alternative or some kind of more, you know, some extra added holistic piece to their practice.
I would, you know, it's like what I said in the training that you attended. It was like, stay curious. Like, maybe the yoga postures or asana isn't your thing, but meditation is. Explore it. Explore more of it. I mean, it's totally needed. It's the only thing that changes your gray matter. So like, hone in on it, you know, perfect your craft, keep practicing. It's not like you take one training and go, yep, I'm good. And this is what I'm going to do now. OT doesn't even work that way, right? We have to have so many continuing ed credits. And so just keep whatever that path is leading you to, just keep, stay curious and keep exploring and keep doing the things and you'll figure it out. Yeah. And I would say if you're, try it out on somebody else's dime. I did that for years where I was doing, you know, in a school and doing traveling therapy. It doesn't mean you have to like go out and start your own business right now because you took a 50-hour training and now you think this is what you want. Just relax. It doesn't have to be like, you know, that's what we do in yoga, but like calm down. Like, it's just figure it out, hone in on it. I mean, heaven forbid you get out there and then you realize, well, maybe I want to shift over here. So like, just, you know, that happens. Like, I hear students all the time, well, I'm really interested in this and this. And I was like, girl, you need to change your mind like 5 times before you even leave this fieldwork site. So like, just calm down.
And also, you don't have to have it all figured out right away, right? Because it'll evolve. And we evolve as OTs, like you mentioned earlier too. How do you describe OT and yoga together? I'm sure you get asked that question all the time.
I do. And I had a hard time, you know, for a while. It was like in the business world, it's like, what problem do you solve? And it's like, well, I help people move and breathe better.
Which then helps them do everything else better, right?
Right. And so it was kind of like, well, that's a little too vague. So, you know, I was talking to the CEO of Easter Seals the other day and I was like, bottom line, I'm just trying to calm the nervous system down enough so that people can function. That's it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really watered down. But I think for somebody who doesn't have a background in therapy or whatever it is that I'm doing, like, that made more sense. We just we need kids calm enough to learn. We need adults calm enough to function and do their occupations. And so I think that's maybe the easiest way to say it. I mean, I know it sounds really watered down, but like trying to figure out what is it going to be for them. And yoga is not just about your yoga mat and your leggings. It's how you're going to be out in the world. And so how can we, you know, incorporate some of that?
So that brings me to my next question, and, you know, answer this in any way that you'd like, but, you know, the eight limbs of yoga and its sort of relationship to the core values of OT.
I mean, I don't think it, I mean, maybe we don't talk about enlightenment in OT, but like, you know, we talk about working with the whole person, and spirituality can be a part of that. And I think because yoga is not tied to a specific religion, that it can work with anybody's faith. And so, you know, you do have the physical practices with, you know, asana and pranayama, but you also have like the meditation, and maybe you don't talk about samadhi in your treatment session. However, but what is that actually, what would enlightenment look like for that person? Does that mean that they can just function in their day?
Yeah.
Like I have a student who's not allowed to have her rosary beads right now. She's Catholic, because of mental health reasons. And so she's not allowed to be alone with string, essentially. And I was like, well, then you use your fingers. I was like, say your Hail Marys. And that's no different than a Japa mala, right? Like,
yes,
doing your mantra with your mala is, if it's like, well, if that's your mantra, then let's do it. If not, let's come up with it. Like, I am peaceful. I am, like, we can come up with different things. And if you can't have the thing, you've got your physical body. So how are we going to do that? And so
how do you adapt, right? How do you modify?
Isn't that what we do?
Yeah. I think we're experts in that, in fact.
So how do you take all of those? And so like the yamas and the niyamas are the things that we're supposed to do and not do, or kind of like the ethical code feeds right into a wellness plan. And it's like that self-awareness of when I'm good or when I'm not good, and what that looks like. And what is that going to look like to an outside observer? How do we know when you need help, when you ask for it, and things like that? And so I think goes back to the student who was like, I'm a six, and like took off in the house, and was like, okay, but now we know not only, I mean, how much interoception for somebody on the spectrum is that? Like, they're aware, now they have an emotion vocabulary and a way to communicate it. And now everybody around them knows what they need to do.
Yeah. And that equips them with the potential to provide a good, appropriate response, right? Like all of those
socially appropriate response to what's going on. And it's interesting because, you know, depending on where you are in the world, that could look different. However, the inner workings, like, we're, you know, how are we going to keep the nervous system calm? What's an appropriate, socially appropriate response for wherever you are in the world? And then how are, you know, it's just kind of like this nice little framework of how we could be. I mean, bottom line, we're trying to be good people. Like at the core
and good to each other. Yes. Yeah.
If we're good to ourselves, then we can help others. And when we serve others, then we can, you know, and that gets more into harm and all that stuff. But, you know, it's starting with something small. So even somebody who works in a group home, I'm like, can they volunteer? Like the whole house, just go out and do, because then they feel like they're productive too.
Yes.
And so pick a limb. Focus in on it and see where it goes from there.
Yeah. And, you know, I always mention this to other occupational therapy practitioners too, that you may not know it, but you're probably already applying some yoga principles into your practice just because of our training and our foundations, our core values as a profession.
Right. Right. It's just, it gives, like, mindfulness became a big buzzword, I would say, in the past couple of years, as far as like, it's just the ability to stay present. That's it. If you can't stay present, then you're not learning in school. If you can't stay present, you're not there for your children. If you can't stay present, it makes it really hard to do your ADLs and stay safe. So the thing that because that's how I can work with, like, it's the lens, right? It doesn't matter the age or the diagnosis. I don't work with labels. The insurance company makes me slap one on there, but that's it. I don't have to, I'm not working with labels. It's just whatever's presented.
Yeah. But it's also important to understand that if that's what's required of you, right, to kind of produce this label, because that's how they're able to see the connection, right? That it's important to take those steps, because I think a lot of OTPs also kind of feel that that's too effortful, or it's just not, you know, an extra, it's an extra step, right? But I think in order to set precedent and in order to, for this to be the norm, we need to be okay with doing that and repeating ourselves if we have to, right? It's kind of like working with a client. Repetition is key. Sometimes
all these things, right?
You need to do it over and over, or say it over and over, or whatever. You know, everyone's different again.
Exactly.
Oh, such great advice. So I know you already talked about a myth or a misconception earlier. Are there others that you'd like to mention or demystify today?
Oh, there's been so many. So I'm in the South and a relatively conservative part of this country. And so I think there's a misnomer that yoga is religion, and it's not. There is some Hindu ties when it comes to, if you read some of the scriptures, but that's because that's where they physically were in the world. And I go, listen, Christ and Krishna doesn't sound too far apart, so just get over it and let's move on. I mean, do we have
to, sometimes you just have to say no, right?
We, you know, I've heard, my husband was helping me with a resource fair, like a health fair table, and this older gentleman proceeded to tell us that his soul did not need to be saved. And it was, you know, so we've gotten some of that. Yoga is not just a physical practice, that there are seven other limbs. And I highly suggest, if you're interested, to go read what they are.
Yeah.
And that, you know, there's a big movement now about decolonizing the practice. And I'm glad I was classically trained. And that I feel like, just because I am a white cis female, that I am doing an okay job making sure that all of those limbs are presented, and that we're not trying to do what the West has done with yoga. Like, you come to one of my classes, you're chanting. Like, that's just how it's going to be. And so, you know, nobody in this area does that. And if it turns people off, they're not my people. Like, that's fine. There's going to be a different practice for them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's plenty of it. You know, getting comfortable with the uncomfortable is probably, I mean, isn't that what the yoga teachings are for? Like, to keep us calm amongst the chaos. And so, so some of that has been interesting here, and trying to debunk myths. And oh, big one. Well, I can't touch my toes. And I'm like, that has nothing to do with yoga. I mean, I can refer you to a physical therapist. It's great at manipulation if you'd like. Like, you know, my friend that's, you know, over by the hospital, he'll be happy to work with you. And so, yeah, it's just, you don't have to be able to touch your toes. It really has nothing to do with flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
Anything, the physical postures can help you improve that if that's a goal for you. But the doesn't have to be like the, oh, I can't do that because I can't. And I was like, okay. I mean, I stopped trying to like argue with it, because they've already kind of put their foot in the sand or whatever. And just like, well, there's options for the chair. There's options for the, there's so many different, I mean, there's props, there's things, like, we can adapt anything.
Yes, we can make it work for you, right? So yeah. I think that's a really great, I get that often too, you know, folks feeling like they don't have what it takes to practice, right? And then I explain kind of how I started and how I practice today, and it's not what one might imagine, you know, where I'm doing headstands all day long. And no, it's really more of my own practice for whatever I need for that day. And that's kind of how I prescribe yoga to some of my clients, right? It's, you know, take whatever you need. That's, yoga's the most forgiving practice that you can ever engage in. And so anywho, you and I probably we're singing from the same choir, but I so very much appreciate you sharing with us your path your practice today. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners?
I don't think so. I don't know. We could talk for hours. So.
I know. Well, you've shared a whole lot already, and I really appreciate that. How about if anyone were interested in reaching out or following you, asking a question, is it okay if they reached out, and how do they find you?
Absolutely. The easiest way to get a hold of me is through the website, which is www.soul2soulyoga.srq, which is like the airport thing. So, you know, we're in Sarasota.com. You can send a message from the website. We're Soul to Soul Yoga SRQ, both on Facebook and Instagram. You can shoot messages there as well. But the website is probably if you want to try to figure out what it is that I'm doing, that's probably the easiest thing to look at.
And we will definitely have your website spelling, et cetera, listed on our notes. And even some of the assessments that you mentioned that you use, like the neurological screen that you use, I know I personally want to check it out and kind of see how I might be able to apply that in my practice. So we'll have those resources available. So thank you again, Cheryl, for your time. I love what you're doing for your clients out there in the world. And I wish you all the best.
Thank you. And thank you for this platform.
And that wraps up another inspiring episode of the Uncommon OT series. Connect with me at www.transitionsot.com. And don't forget to sign up to be part of the Transitions OT community. By doing so, you'll receive my latest compiled list of Uncommon OT practice settings, the latest news on mentoring offerings, Uncommon OT live events, non-traditional OT resources, and more. You may also follow me on my social media pages on Instagram and LinkedIn. And if you love this episode, head on over to Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, and Google Podcasts to follow, rate, and leave a review. I also ask you to consider pledging your support to my passion podcast project by being a patron on Patreon. It is very much appreciated. Sending big OT love. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.